listening to The Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Brought to you by WelcomeToPerfectville.com. Prepare to go deep.
Welcome back to another episode of The Finalysis Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, again with you as always. And we know we're on the bye week this week. We are actually 7 days AD, and that is 7 days after Dolphins football. So me and my co-host, Kevin, felt like we needed to go ahead and record an episode to get you guys caught up on the week's happenings and some of the Dolphins news going on, as well as just kind of checking in on the team from the bye week. So I am joined here, as always, with my co-host and defensive coordinator of Perfectville, Kevin Dern. Kevin, how you doing tonight, man?
Ooh, I like the new title. I'll take it. I'm doing well.
I just gave it to you, so I hope you enjoy that.
No, that works. I like it. So.
All right, perfect. Well, I don't think that Vance Joseph's out of a job anytime soon, but you might be breathing down his neck for the next in line if he does get fired. So
I'm happy to give him some advice, but I think he's got the job locked up for a while.
Yeah, he's taking care of business, especially the last couple of weeks. So, and because of that, you know, we're 3-4. We're kind of riding high, and me and Kevin wanted to go ahead and record another episode and kind of talk to you about just some of the happenings of what's going on this Sunday as we record right now on Sunday evening, and kind of catch up on where the Dolphins stand with their playoff hopes. And it's kind of interesting we're talking about playoff hopes after the 1-4 start, but here we are. You know, this team has been 3-4 in 3 of the last 5 seasons and 4-3 in the other 2 seasons. So after 7 games, it's been 3-4 or 4-3, and here we are again, and we're going to see if Adam Gase possibly can be the difference maker in getting this team going for the second half and the last part of the schedule. So I hope they are. I think they can be. The schedule certainly softens up. We'll get to that later in the episode, but Kevin, did you get a chance to watch much of the games today?
No, I actually got stuck at a work function, so I saw like the very first kickoff of the Bengals-Redskins game, and then I saw like one drive of the Packers and Falcons game, and that was about it today.
So Kevin was busy with work doing real important stuff. I had a birthday this weekend, so I had a lot of alcohol consumption, and therefore was on the couch for most of the day and just kind of kept the mixed channel and red zone channel, and I was pretty much a master of my remote and going back and forth. I watched a couple of the big games that impacted the Dolphins because, you know, here we are finding ourselves needing to count on other teams to lose again to get back into the postseason. So what we wanted to start off with this episode, actually, let's go back and start with the first bit of news. We had some Dolphins breaking news this morning coming in from over the pond, overseas in England, where the Redskins and Bengals played today, but they actually announced that the Dolphins are going to be hosting the New Orleans Saints in 2017 in London, and it will, in fact, be a Dolphins home game. So not great news to wake up to, Kevin. What time did you see that at today?
I think I saw it on my phone. I got an ESPN alert right around noon, so right in the middle of our work event. So that was – I didn't really have time to give it much thought, but, you know, that's the fourth time the Dolphins will be over there, and – you know, it just seems kind of unfair. I was reading about the international series, and I was kind of surprised that there's only 8 teams left that haven't played a game over there. But, you know, I guess the Dolphins have to do one more trip over to London to get that Super Bowl in 2020. So I get it, but I don't really feel that strongly about it, you know.
That is pretty interesting that only 8 teams haven't gone over there. And I saw a tweet today. And someone talked about how come none of the big market teams ever go over there. And I was thinking, well, the Giants have gone over there. I haven't seen the Cowboys or the Packers, or I think the Steelers haven't gone either. Maybe they have. I'm not sure. But that does seem to be the case. And it seems like a lot of these teams on the East Coast, you know, right off the coastline, they're off the Atlantic, are getting sent over. And the Dolphins have been the biggest culprit with their fourth trip. Today was the 17th game played in London. And the Dolphins will be either the 18th, 19th, or 20th, or whatever it is, because they play 3 or 4 a year now. And it'll be our third time as the host team. So 3 home games lost in the last decade to London. Last year was a divisional game against the Jets. And my thought was that if they're going to cost us a home divisional game, which is complete BS, that we should get the favor returned and play the Jets again over there as the road team. Alas, that's not the case. It's an NFC opponent. The Saints have a pretty much equal travel as we do, just an extra hour or so, whatever that distance is there. And, you know, it's tough news to hear. It's tough to take because those 8 home games are so precious, especially with this new stadium remodel and the way the team's been playing at home this year so far. It's a sour taste, but, you know, I guess it's not the end of the world, and the Super Bowl will be a big event for us, and hopefully we can be that first team to get a home Super Bowl when it comes in 2020.
Yeah, I think that's the one bit of silver lining is that it's not even an AFC game. It's a intra-conference game against New Orleans, who, you know, they're not that good. Miami's been over there before, even though Adam Gase isn't there. I feel like, you know, we'll at least know the lay of the land. All the staffers and equipment guys, they've been on that trip. So, you know, I feel like we have a little bit of an advantage there. And it's actually kind of interesting. You were speaking about the teams that haven't gone. It's kind of a weird mix of teams in big markets and then some of the smaller teams. You know, just for those trivia nuts out there, the 8 teams that haven't gone, I looked this up.
Yeah,
right,
please
now.
Do, because I wasn't sure what they were. Yeah. I'm curious to hear it myself.
So you've got some big market games, obviously Arizona, Philadelphia, Seattle. Those are your big market teams that really haven't been over there. The rest of the teams that have never played in London are Baltimore, Carolina, Cleveland, which, you know, I guess that's sort of the sports universe right now. It's everywhere but the Browns. Green Bay's never been, and then the Tennessee Titans have never been. So it's kind of an odd mix of big and small market teams. But, you know, and then they had 4 brand new teams this year that had never gone over that are playing in the game. So Cincinnati, Houston, Indy, and Washington had all never played until this year over in London. So
Dallas,
I think
Dallas did go over there then.
Yeah. And then I guess to be correct, Houston is actually going to play Oakland, but it's going to be in Mexico City on November 21st. So it's not a Wembley game. It's actually in Mexico.
That's right. Okay, so that makes sense. Yeah, that kind of feeds to the Oakland fan base. Out here on the West Coast, that's pretty much the entire fan base is the Hispanic population. So that makes a lot of sense. So 4th game in London coming up next year. But that's next year. Let's get more back into this year as you get your Dolphins news fixed for the evening. I had a chance to watch a bunch of the games today. And the premise of what our next little segment here is going to be is how do the Dolphins stack up in the AFC wildcard picture? Because I'm sure, as you all know, the Patriots with Tom Brady, I saw another tweet today of something like, if you extrapolate Brady's stats for the past 4 games he's been back over the course of a full season, he had, or was it three or 4 games, I can't recall, he has like 4, it would be 4,000 passing yards, 36 touchdown passes, and no interceptions. So I think that's pretty good from a quarterbacking standpoint. So they're 6-1. The AFC East is theirs. I don't even have to tell you guys that. So the Dolphins looking. Sorry, go ahead.
I agree that unless he like tears an ACL, you know, and even then we still have a lot of work to do to catch him. So I agree there.
Exactly. So I'm pretty much putting that out of the frame of mind. So their win today actually probably helped the Dolphins because the Bills have dropped their second straight game, going back to 4-4. So we're right within reaching distance of them for the second place in the division. And so kind of looking at some of the teams we have to compete with for probably the 6th seed, because as I look at the AFC West right now, you have the Raiders at 6-2, Chiefs and Broncos are both at 5-2. So I got to imagine there's going to be one team coming from that division out of the wild card. And I guess the best hope is they beat each other up a little bit and help the Dolphins out. But so I got a list of teams here that I think are competing with the Dolphins. And Kevin, you can go ahead and tell me if you disagree or agree, but I eliminated a few teams for a couple of reasons, and I'll tell you why. So I took the Jets out of the picture because in order for the Dolphins to get where we got to go, we got to beat them next week. And that would send the Jets to 3-6 if they lose that game. And I think pretty much eliminates their hopes. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick's been a dumpster fire this year. They were down to Cleveland 13 at half today and came back and won that game. So they're just not looking like a good team. So I took them out of the picture because we're above them and we play them next and have to beat them. The Chargers are another team I eliminated because they are 3-5 as well, a half game below us. And I have them as a team we have to beat moving forward to get into the playoffs because those AFC games are so important and the Chargers could potentially be in the mix with us. And if we beat them, get the tiebreaker and have the better record moving forward, I think it's going to be tough for them to catch us. Yeah. So I took them out.
So we've got to win the next 2.
Yeah, to get to San Diego, right. I agree. But I also eliminated the entire AFC South because I think that entire division is pretty much garbage. And the only reason they're going to have a playoff team is because they have to by league rules. And even though Houston got to 5-3 today with a healthy win over the Lions, I think they probably take the division. The Titans are 4-4, and I guess they could too, but I just don't see either of those teams getting above, or I should say I don't see both those teams getting above 500. So I think that one of them will come from the division, and the other 3 teams will be eliminated. That's the Colts, Titans, and Jaguars, as well as the Texans. So any thoughts on that, Kevin?
I agree with that, and I think, you know, I pulled up the playoff picture as it stands right now. They have Miami as the 11th seed. The teams in front of us immediately are Baltimore, who we play, 4 games from now.
Yep.
The Bengals, who had a tie today. Buffalo, we've got a tiebreaker over. And then the 7th seed right now is Tennessee, who has a tiebreaker over us, unfortunately. So I think we better become fans of everyone who plays the Titans, and then I guess we just gotta hope someone in the we can catch at least one of the AFC West teams.
Yeah, that game
that gets us their spot.
That game does seem to be the big one that's going to make a big difference in our season, because that head-to-head tiebreaker is so important when you come when it comes down to 9 or 10 wins in the season. That extra win or that tiebreaker is like an extra win. So I hear you there. I don't believe in that team. I could be wrong. I don't believe in Mike Mularkey. I know Mariota's playing hot right now, but they're beating up on some bad teams, and they've had some close wins against some bad teams, and I guess we were one of those teams that ran all over, but I just don't believe in them, so that's why I dismissed them from the records there. And their schedule, it tightens up a little bit, but they do have the rest of the AFC South game, so I'm just going off the belief that that division's going to have one playoff team, so that's kind of where I'm going with that.
Yeah, and then the other team that has a tiebreaker over us that's in front of us right now is Cincinnati. So they played in the London game, so they're on a bye next week. So with a win, we can catch them. They still have 4 more road games, and they've got some tough teams to play. They still have to play at the Giants. They have another game at Baltimore. They play Philly. They play the Steelers again. They play at Houston, and they play Baltimore actually in the season finale, so they got the Ravens twice. So I feel like our chances of leapfrogging them are pretty good.
Yeah, and they are one of the teams I wrote down, but I'm with you on that. And I know we have the head-to-head loss there, but with their tie today, there's no possibility of a tiebreaker unless we tie a game. So that kind of defeats that whole tiebreaker scenario. So they're one of the teams I wrote down. I wrote down Baltimore as well. But Baltimore is 3-4, coming off of 4 straight losses, and they've still got to play Pittsburgh twice, Cincinnati twice, us, New England, Philadelphia, and Dallas. So I'm going to go ahead and cross them off the list too, because they're not getting past 8-8 with that schedule. And that's probably even hopeful thinking at that point. So Baltimore out of the AFC North is probably no more. I have Pittsburgh taking that division. I think they're by far the best team in that division, so that's why I don't have them on my list. Cleveland's 0-8. I think we know what that means. The AFC South is out. And then, like I said, the AFC West is where it really kind of tightens up for the Dolphins, because someone's taking the division. I couldn't tell you who it's going to be, because they all look pretty good to me right now. If I had to guess,
for record keeping, I've got the bracket pulled up. So right now, Oakland at 6-2 has the number 2 seed, and then Kansas City actually is ahead of Denver. They're both 5-2, but the Chiefs are the 5 seed. Denver's the 6 seed. So, and then the Chiefs obviously had a ton of injuries today, including Alex Smith.
Yeah. So did you see that hit? By the way, did you see that at all?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you see that Alex Smith stuff today?
No, I didn't get a chance to see it.
Dude, I was watching that game, and because I have some vested interest in the Colts this year based on the over-under bet I made in Vegas. So I've been watching the Colts pretty closely. And he slid in front of a defender and got his bell rung, and then his head hit off the carpet. And he gets up, and he like woozily falls to the floor again, and they take him off the field for concussion protocol. And he comes walking back out of the tunnel like 15 minutes later. I'm like, okay, he's probably coming back out to, you know, work the headsets or whatever. And they put him back in the game, and the same thing happens. He slides down, and the guy hits him, and his head ping-pongs off the turf again. And I'm just thinking, there's no way he's coming back next week. Maybe
that actually reminds me of Trent Green when he was with the Chiefs. He got that nasty concussion, and if I remember right, it pretty much ended his career. He tried to come play for us for a year, and you know that never materialized. So.
And then he got the Ted Ginn or the reverse, where I think it was Travis Johnson knocked him out and then taunted his lifeless body on the field in Houston down there. But I was watching that game, and my girlfriend was kind of doing some chores around the house, and I paused and go, "Hey, look at this." And she goes, "Isn't he like supposed to come out of the game?" She doesn't even watch football. And so I'm like, "Yeah, I'm pretty surprised they let him back in the game." So we'll see what happens with Alex Smith going forward. Best of wishes to him. I don't want him to be out there getting his head scrambled like Trent Green did, like you said. So
hopefully. And I saw Spencer Ware got hurt in that game too. Was it bad?
Yeah, I think it was also a concussion with Spencer Ware. They also lost their left guard to a knee injury too, so they got pretty banged up in that game. And then if you look at their schedule moving forward, this AFC West is really intriguing, man, because these guys have some pretty tough games coming up too, because they all play each other in almost like a round robin situation. So Kansas City still has, they got Jacksonville this week at home, so that should be a win for them. But they go to Carolina, to Denver, to Atlanta. They host Oakland, Tennessee, Denver, and then they at San Diego. And I missed a Bucs game in there too, Tampa Bay at home. So that's a tough road. Oakland still got to play, like, I think you already went over this. Oakland plays Denver twice, Houston, Carolina, on the road at Kansas City. So there's a tough road there. And I heard a stat today. Oakland's 6-2 with a 12-point differential on the season. So they're eking games out late. I guess that's a good sign of a good team, but at the same time, you know, they're vulnerable. So a lot of these teams have weaknesses. Me and Kevin were talking via text earlier today, and, you know, the Dolphins have plenty of weaknesses, obviously, you know, with the kind of the mishmash secondary they have back there, and the quarterback might not be playing the best this year, but all these teams have weaknesses, and that's kind of where I think the Dolphins can make some ground because of the schedule they have coming up. And, you know, Kevin, you and I discussed the Dolphins schedule coming up forward here, and if you look at all these teams we listed, they have some tough games, but I'll go ahead and let you talk about how, not simple because the National Football League, nothing simple, but this Dolphins schedule coming up just is looking really light.
Yeah, so I think here is my kind of theory on it. You know, as we talked about, they pretty much have to win the next two games against the Jets and the Chargers. You know, if you lose either of those, I think Miami's chances are pretty much shot because that puts you at five losses. So my thinking is you beat the Jets, you beat San Diego, so you've taken care of business there. I feel like New England at this point, they're going to have home field advantage in the division all locked up well before we play them in week 17. If that's the case, I doubt they play Tom Brady in that game, especially after what happened last year when Sue basically took him out because he got hit in the helmet. And, you know, I think New England's just a big believer in that game theory. They're going to play a very vanilla thing and they'll play all backups. So I'll give us a win there. And we've beat them three straight years in Miami for whatever reason. I can't figure that one out. But so that gives you three wins. San Francisco comes. We play them 1 o'clock. West Coast teams going to the East Coast. Never do well. San Francisco's 1-6. Their run defense is terrible, which has been, you know, Miami's red hot ticket the last 2 weeks. So I think that gives you four wins. That puts us at 7. So with the rest of the games, I think you got to steal 2 from playing at LA, home against Arizona, who's a pretty Jekyll and Hyde team, in my opinion, from what I've seen. You got to play at the Jets again, but I think that game might set up pretty well because if Miami wins next week, that'll give the Jets a 6th loss. That pretty much knocks them out of the playoffs because they've lost to several other teams in front of them, including the Bengals and the Dolphins. So we could be very well seeing, you know, Bryce Petty or Christian Hackenberg at that point. So
neither
that
of which, neither of which of those guys, sorry to cut you off, to me is NFL caliber. I don't see them being able to function on offense at all if those guys are in. So I'm with you on that all the way.
And then, you know, the other game against L.A., that could very well be Jared Goff's first start if the Rams keep struggling offensively.
Ooh,
so
I sure hope so.
I think that kind of, if that does play out that way, I think that kind of gives Miami an edge. The one game I'm really hesitant about is the Buffalo game in week 16. Ryan Tannehill's never played well there. I think we're 0-4, and most of those games have been pretty decidedly blowouts. I know last year was. We got shut out in 2013. I think we lost to EJ Manuel in week 2 in 2014. You know, Rex Ryan basically said we out-physicaled them, so you know he's going to come back and want revenge. And if it's a game where, you know, Buffalo's pretty much eliminated and Miami's got a chance, you know he's going to pull out all the stops to try and knock the Dolphins out.
Yep.
Or if it comes down to a game where, you know, we're both competing for that 6th spot, you know, I just don't trust Miami in the cold, on the road, at Buffalo, in a place where Tannehill struggled. So I feel like that one I would chalk up to an L. So I think we got to steal two wins out of the Arizona game, the Rams game, and the second Jets game. And I think if you do that, you kind of let the chips fall where they may in regards to the AFC West and hope you get in with 9 or 10 wins.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm thinking more along the lines of 10 because of the way the AFC West looks, but 9 is possible. It just depends on how everything shakes out. I do want to give you an optimist look at that Buffalo game, though. The last time we did beat him up in Orchard Park was in 2011 when Reggie Bush had 200 rushing yards. And as you guys all know, Jay Ajayi is on a 200-yard tear this year. There probably won't be another game where he doesn't run for 200 yards because he's that good. So I'm thinking that he could do that again for the next 10 games or so and keep us riding this thing. Sarcasm aside, I'm in agreement with you on those games. And back to your Arizona point that you made about them being a Jekyll and Hyde team. A lot of that, I don't know if Jekyll or Hyde's which one's the worst of the two. I'm not familiar with the.
Oh, geez. I can't remember my high school English class that well right now, but one of them is bad.
So whoever the bad guy is the Arizona on the East Coast in the 1 o'clock Eastern time slot, because they played in Buffalo back in week 3, I think it was. and they got beat 33-18, and they had a late score in that game that made it look better than it was. And then today they were down 30-7 in Carolina in the early time slot on the East Coast. So I think that really limits their abilities on offense and on defense as well. So that's a game that if we're, you know, tuned up and playing good football, that could be, we could almost even be favorites if things kind of keep going the way they are the last few weeks. So hopefully that is the case and we move forward with that. So I'm thinking, you know, if we can get to 10 wins, we'll be safe. 9, maybe. I'd like to see 10 for sure, but it's going to be a fun stretch, provided we win these next couple of games. Like you said, the Jets and Chargers games are must wins. So I hope that happens moving forward. So that's all I got to say on that mark there, Kevin. You got anything else for us on the schedule?
No, not right now. I mean, I think for our next episode, we're going to do a Jets preview and kind of get everyone primed for that game. I cheated and watched a little bit of them Friday night. And, you know, I think it'll set up a little tougher for us offensively, but I think they have some weaknesses we can exploit. So I'll leave that tease in there for the next episode.
Yeah, and I'm with you too on that. And I will give you a little bit of teaser thinking. And I'm just going to say that I think that the way we beat them is not going to be the way we beat the Bills and Jets. So there's my tease as well.
Yeah.
We'll get that preview going sometime this week. I think we'll probably record on Tuesday, and then we'll put it out as soon as we can for you guys. So look forward to that. It's going to be a Jets game preview, and we're going to do a midseason review where we go over the roster and kind of give out some player grades for everybody. So that'll be our regular hour or so allotted time. We're going to spend another 10 minutes or so with you today as we have one more segment for you. And I'll send it over to Kevin to get to it first after I introduce it, I should say. We were texting about some ideas for tonight's show, and I said, why don't we talk about some of the most important players in this team? Because I was watching some games and some guys get knocked out. You know, we talked about Alex Smith getting knocked out of the game and Spencer Ware getting knocked out of the game. And I was thinking, which of these guys can we at least afford to lose? You know, you got the offensive line that's playing really well now that it's healthy. The secondary is a little bit banged up with some mishmash guys out there. The linebackers are what they are. So I was asking Kevin, I was like, you know what, who are the five most important players that we can ill afford to lose in this team? And I had a really tough time come up with my list. I wrote down 8 guys, and I tried to put 5 in there, but we'll see how it goes. But I'm going to shoot over Kevin for his top 5 most important Dolphins players for the rest of the year this year, not moving forward, just for 2016.
Yeah, so it was kind of a tough exercise because we're starting to get some guys back. You know, it sounds like Earl Mitchell will be back for the San Diego game. Chris Culver could be back. Deion Jordan, who knows? So do you want me to go 1-5 or 5-1?
Ooh, go 5-1. That one's always the
five
last one.
5-1, okay. This one I put at 5, but I feel like he could be higher. If you put him higher on your list, I wouldn't argue. But I put Mike Pouncey. You know, I went back and looked at it. We actually scored considerable points in some of the games when he was out. We played Seattle tough. We scored 30 against the Browns. I think it really showed that we missed him when he was out during the Bengals game. You know, I mean, I'm talking about Anthony Steen. I'm sorry. So when Steen was in, we were still able to move the ball. But I think the last 2 weeks really show you how good Mike Pouncey is and how important he is. He gets out on the perimeter, does some pulling to the second level. Steen really doesn't do that as well.
Yeah.
So that's why I put him at 5. Number 4, I put Ndamukong Suh. He leads the team in sacks right now with 3.5. He's our best run stopper. I believe going into this week, Pro Football Focus rated him the number 1 D tackle. Maybe that was 2 weeks ago, but I know he's near the top. Without him, you know, just the combination of Jordan Phillips and Earl Mitchell doesn't really sound very good to me.
Right.
Especially in some of the teams we're going to play in the second half who can run the ball, like New York, the Rams, Buffalo again. Third, this one was the one I kind of struggled with. You may not have him on the list, but I put Issa Abdul-Kaddous, only for the fact that I think he's played really well the last couple games. I think he's played well all season. He's leading the team in interceptions. But we're already missing Rashad Jones. If Issa Abdul-Kaddous goes down, you're basically working with a trio of Michael Thomas, Bakari Rambo, and Walt Akins.
Yeesh.
And with the way our corners are banged up right now at the moment, they're not all the way healthy back yet. That's scary. So I think his health, you know, the rest of the season is big. 2, I put Brandon Albert. Because if he goes down, you've got to move Tunsil to left tackle. Then you got to figure out who's going to play left guard between Steen and Urbick. And I don't really know if either of those guys are all that impressive at guard. But I think that just kind of creates a hole in and of itself because you're moving Tunsil back to left tackle. Now, I thought he played good in the Cincinnati game, but, you know, Miami's never really seemed to have good guard play until we played the last couple weeks. And then number one, obviously, is Ryan Tannehill. If something happens to him and we have Matt Moore, I think that basically makes Miami's offense one-dimensional. And as good as Jay Ajayi is, you know, I don't think that's enough to carry Miami to 9 or 10 wins without him. And I think if Tannehill's able to improve, we can sort of reinvigorate the play-action game, the intermediate passing. That's just going to help the offense as a whole moving forward for the final 9-game stretch. So those are my five. I put one honorable mention, and that's Xavien Howard, just because I think if he comes back and plays well, that gives Miami some more flexibility in what they can do. I've heard a few rumors that Chris Culliver may be looked at as a safety at some juncture. So I thought he was our best cover corner until he got hurt. So he was my honorable mention.
That's a really interesting list. You know, Kevin and I were texting before we got on the air here to go ahead and record, and I was talking to him about this idea, and I said, you know what, why don't you go ahead and not tell me your list, because I wanted to sound a little more genuine on the recording, and I'm very surprised, because I thought a couple of your guys, I knew you were going to do that, but your number one really surprised me, because I was thinking, he's on my list too, but I was thinking, I don't know if he's going to put him on there, because we've trashed on him so much, but like you said, he is important to this team, because one of the criteria here was, what's the guy's backup look like? And I am not a believer in Matt Moore at all. I don't think he's worth, you know, his weight in salt or whatever you call that saying. I just don't think he can function this offense.
I mean, in essence, we're two bad plays away from having to play Brandon Doughty. And the way things are right now, if something happens to Tannehill and Moore, I guess Marquise Gray is the emergency quarterback just because he played it in college.
That would actually be kind of fun to see, because if Tannehill goes down, the season's over, and I don't really care to see Matt Moore, so I wouldn't mind just going to him number two anyways. But, I mean, we saw Matt Moore get hit in the Dallas game, and he was out, so the durability that Tannehill has is nowhere near the same for Matt Moore. So that's actually my number five, is Ryan Tannehill, for those reasons you said. You know, the play-action game, I think, is getting going a little bit. I think he's going to start improving over the second half of the season as he gets more familiar in the offense. I'm excited to see what he can do with 2 weeks to prep for the Jets with Adam Gase. First time he's had that in his career, you know, with this new coach. You know, his last two games, he's played a really safe style of football, and he's protected the ball, and he's got us in good situations in the passing game, converted some big third downs. I just think Matt Moore is sloppy, and he's going to make a lot more mistakes than Tannehill will, even though Tannehill's had a rough year as far as turnovers go. So he's my number five. Number four, I did put Issa Abdul-Kaddous, and the two reasons you said are exactly why. He's playing really well. He's playing great football. He was a heck of a find, a bargain free agent we got from Detroit. But like you said, his backups are ugly. I mean, Rashad Jones was the captain of this defense and everything, but it seems like they're at least weathering the storm for now through the one game they've not had him. But if we lose both starting safeties, that depth really gets thin, and you're starting two bad players
back. Quick sidebar here. How much better would you feel about our playoff chances if Rashad Jones was still active, like if he hadn't gotten hurt against the Steelers?
A lot. I mean, he's our best player, man. And I just, the way he galvanizes his team on defense, the way Jay Ajayi has the last 2 weeks, and, you know, a leadership standpoint and a physical standpoint. And our takeaways are going to suffer from not having him, because he's good for, you know, 5 or 6 takeaways a year. So kind of sucks that he's down, but like you said, but we'll see if we can weather the storm there. So Tanny number five, Issa Abdul-Kaddous number four. And then the guy that I preemptively cut in our cut or keep show, number three, is Jay Ajayi. I just think the way he's running the ball now is giving the Dolphins a new identity. I've been talking about it every show from here back to about 5 episodes ago, saying this needs to be a power running team with the Dolphins, and he embodies that completely. I think that if he can keep going he's not going to keep going at this current rate, but I think I've seen a lot of film cut-ups and some articles written on him about his balance and pad level and his vision, and he looks special to me, and I hope that continues. It may not, but I hope it does. So I have him as number three. And that's another thing with that is, you know, Damian Williams is like a 10 to 15 snap per game guy. Kenyon Drake can't stay on the field for more than 2 snaps without making a mistake that gets him benched. And then, you know, Arian Foster's obviously gone, so that running back room is super thin without Ajayi right now. And then number two is the guy that you listed, and I have Mike Pouncey up there. I kicked around. I knew I had to put an offensive lineman on here because the whole unicorn line, you know, the 8-1 with those 3 starting offensive linemen and everything with the stats that go along with it, 30-plus points per game and all that stuff. but we don't have a true backup center. I know Steen, like you said, he played okay in Pouncey's absence, but you can see the serious upgrade that he is over Steen right now, the way he gets out in space. And I think his leadership brings a lot to the table too, and getting these guys in the right protection calls and making sure the offense is in the right, you know, the right play at all times with Tannehill being there in rhythm under center. So Mike Pouncey, number two. I think Tunsil and Albert are kind of the same for me in terms of who's more important than the other, because like you said, you can kick Tunsil out to left tackle, but we do have a big hole at left guard if one of those guys goes down. So you are right there. I can only pick one. I don't want to pick two, so I went with Pouncey.
I just think there's more mechanics involved when you've got a – essentially, if Albert goes down, you have two new guys.
That's true.
Know, even though Tunsil's played left tackle. But like I said, if you would put Pouncey at two for my list and Albert at five, I wouldn't argue that.
Yeah, and like you said, moving two guys, that does make a big difference. So I guess, yeah, I agree with you on that. I didn't want to put two guys on there, but it makes sense why you would. I can totally understand that. And then number one, I put Ndamukong Suh. Without Rashad Jones, he's the vocal leader of this team. I guess you could say Cam Wake is as well, but Sue's out there 90% of the time on snap, on defense, you know, 85-90% of the time, taking up the majority of the snaps. And you just look at the interior of this line, it's good with Sue, with Phillips as a rotational guy, rotating in with hopefully Earl Mitchell now, and, Jason Jones and Andre Branch kind of rotating into that nickel rusher on the interior, all that, you know, the different matchups they have there. But I think without Sue, it becomes incredibly thin. You go from a superstar, like top-level talent, to just mediocre play at another starting spot. So I can't afford to lose him and Rashad Jones from that defense. My honorable mention, I didn't want to put a receiver because I think this receiver group is pretty deep. And I think Leonte Carew is capable of at least handling his job out there when he comes into the game. I thought he played okay at Seattle. I mean, he had one, maybe two catches, but I think that was a function of the offense. I just think he can come in for Devontae Parker or Jarvis Landry and at least, you know, maybe hold the fort down. So I couldn't put a receiver on the list. So Jarvis doesn't get the cut, even though he would be my receiver that we can least afford to lose. And then I also had Cam Wake, and that's another thing with leadership and his pass rush prowess, because this team likes to get out in front and run the ball and rush the passer, and that's been the recipe the last two games, and it's worked very well. So he was on there for honorable mention, but his low snap count doesn't allow me to put him on the top five list.
Yeah, I would agree with. As soon as I got through the list, I was like, oh crap, I forgot Cam Wake. You know, he's pretty valuable. I agree on Landry too. I think if something happens to him, you know, at least the dynamics of the passing game change quite a bit, and he seems to be kind of a leader on offense too, even if he's not the official captain. But
yeah,
you know, I think the guys feed off his energy. So
absolutely,
why I agree with both of them.
That's why I went with Ajayi. It was, you know, the energy source he provides. I'm a big fan of these guys that provide a spark, and Ajayi and Landry are definitely both those. But Ajayi does it without getting the unsportsmanlike penalties every game. So I guess that's what he's got going for him. So that's my list from here, man. I'm pretty much good on that. You got anything else you want to add to the show?
No. Only other guy I could think of maybe would be Matt Darr, just because he's got us in some pretty good field position setups. But, punters are punters, even though I know Rich Eisen likes to say punters are people too.
Well, now we've reached a portion of the podcast talking about kickers, so I think it's definitely time for us to cut it off.
Time to sign off, yeah.
That's right. So he's Kevin Dern. I'm Travis Wingfield. We're with Perfectville on the Finalysis podcast. Don't forget to check out the Perfectville podcast with Sam Marcoux and Chris Cullen. They'll be recording this week again for the Jets preview. We will be back later in the week for a Jets preview as well as a midseason review to go ahead and look at what some of these guys have done and what we can expect moving forward, as well as, you know, a film breakdown of the Jets on defense and offense from me and Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter @_TravisWrites. Kevin is @KevinMD4. Check us out there. You can check out the Wright Travis Wright blog portion of Perfectville, and we'll see you guys later in the week.
Yep, sounds good.
Go Fins.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, and go to welcometoperfectville.com for the very best coverage of your Miami Dolphins. Fins up.